we're going to bring you excerpts from an extended interview we did some months ago with Dan Fortson. In June of July in 2002, environmental troubadour Fortson of Oregon traveled to occupied Palestine after he had been shocked by the reports a friend of his had sent back to him about what his friend had seen in occupied Palestine. He wanted to see firsthand what it was like over there, and he wanted to do what he put it as use his freedom in defense of the freedoms of others. He wanted to go over there, see what was going on, and if possible, try to help the people there. What follows are excerpts from an interview we did on the anniversary of the one-year anniversary of the Jenin massacre in April of 2002. Frank has asked me to let you know that Dan is currently serving a federal prison sentence, a 3-month federal prison sentence, for his protests at the U.S. Army School of the Americas.
When I arrived in Jenin in mid-June, it was not under siege or under curfew, but everyone had a feeling it was going to be reoccupied shortly. And what I saw in Jenin just shook me to the core. There's no other way to explain it. It is beyond war crime. It is a crime against humanity in Jenin. I was in Jenin for 9 days. I was losing about a pound a day because I was running on adrenaline and sleep deprivation. When the Israelis go house to house in occupied Jenin refugee camp, they will tell the media they are looking for terrorists. What they're really doing is smashing things up. The Israelis trash things. They knock everything over. They steal what they can steal. Now, I was in Jenin when they retook Jenin. And it was a full-scale military invasion. If there were any Palestinian defenders, they would be nothing more than a few men with Kalashnikov rifles against tanks, Apache helicopters, rockets, a full-scale world-class army on the offensive. When the Israelis went into Jenin in April of 2002, they demolished an area roughly about 1 acre. They demolished homes with people inside them. Some 55 people died during the invasion. It was, once again, beyond a war crime. It was a crime against humanity.
Dan worked with other international activists to try to protect ambulances and medical facilities in Palestine. He actually traveled to a lot of different cities, but we're focusing here tonight on his experiences in Jenin. We'll let him talk a little bit about those experiences with the ambulances.
This is another war crime. It really bothers me as a veteran because I've studied the Geneva Convention and I know the rules of warfare, and you do not shoot at an ambulance. What this man is pointing to here are bullet holes. It's a violation of Geneva Convention to shoot at an ambulance. More than 40 people have died during this second intifada because when a Palestinian ambulance comes up to a checkpoint, the Israelis will not let it through. And so if you have a pregnant woman or a person who needs to go to a hospital, more than 40 of them have died in the ambulances because they are not allowed to go through. There's no reason that the Israelis could not search the vehicle in 2 minutes and wave them through without incident. No reason other than politics. I rode shotgun with the Red Crescent, which is the Islamic equivalent of the Red Cross. I decided I would ride in the ambulances when I saw that they had been shot. I saw the bullet holes, and I said, I understand that there will be no more bullet holes in an ambulance while I'm here, at whatever risk. Myself and two Icelanders decided that was going to be something we were going to do. We spent 4 days riding in the ambulances. At that point, it was mostly routine calls. We had also made ourselves available to travel through a checkpoint if they needed us. We're leveraging our status as Westerners, that the Israeli armies had more respect for our lives than they do the Palestinians. But we were determined that that's what we were going to do. As it turned out, most of the calls were routine calls. We were delivering medicine. We were picking people up. In some cases, two of those days were under siege, and so ambulances were allowed to travel around when no one else was, delivering medicines and things like that. We did get stopped. We were interrogated, and I explained to people, to the soldiers, that I'm here as a human shield. They chose not to shoot at us for the time we were there.
the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, noted in September of 2002 that there had been a tenfold increase in the percentage of at-home deliveries of babies in the occupied territories as a result of closures limiting access to services. The result is that there's been a 58% increase in stillbirths in occupied Palestine. In addition to the ambulances, we talked to Dan about the overall effect of the closures and the curfews.
A curfew in occupied Palestine is when the Israeli army rolls into a town. These days it's not even announced. It's just known when the tanks roll in, you're under curfew. You are not allowed to go outside of your home. If you're at work when the curfew starts, you stay at work. If there are no beds there, that's not their problem. Obviously, it's impossible to conduct any reasonable amount of economic activity. It's impossible for children to go to school. A curfew means if you're a Palestinian and you're caught outside during curfew, you're shot on sight. You're presumed to be a terrorist and shot on sight. As far as what Palestinians have to say about it, they manage to find ways to get things done during curfew. You know, they stock up on supplies when they can so they can have something to eat during curfew. This curfew might last a week at a time, and then maybe it might be lifted for half a day and then shut back down, and then another week under curfew. These people are prisoners inside their own homes, inside their own country. You know, Palestinians do their best to try to get by, to try to make do, but clearly these curfews are a problem. They're strangling the economy of Palestine. They're interfering with children's ability to get an education.
Dan witnessed many terrible things during the weeks he was in Jenin as the Israeli tanks rolled back in. But we're just going to bring you one story he described, a story told to him by a Palestinian shoemaker.
This was a man who manufactured shoes, and his shop was next to his, it was sort of in the basement of his home. So that he had the ability to be productive to some extent during the curfew. And the story that he told me was that he was running one of his machines. He had quite an impressive industrial manufacturing setup in his basement there. And he was running one of his machines, and the soldiers heard it from outside his building and came in, asked him what was going on. I said, I'm manufacturing shoes. See, here's my shoes, and here's the laces, and here's the soles, and here's the raw the raw leather that I make the shoes from and such. I'm a shoemaker. And they decided that they would destroy the equipment. And I saw the equipment that they destroyed. Just smashed it up, wrecked the man's livelihood. Couldn't possibly be related to terrorism if he tried. These are specialized sewing machines, heavy-duty sewing machines, and things used in the manufacture of shoes. Couldn't possibly have anything to do with terrorism. Destroyed it just for the sake of destroying it.